Chapter 71. Taln 11. Taln could still hear the men riding away from him in terror, screaming as the waters roared toward them. He had done what he could to save them, trying so hard to scare them into deserting or retreating. Their commanders had been stubborn, however. At first, they had been determined to continue on toward Jasnah's army. Eventually, their determination had instead become focused on finding the man who had killed their guards and scouts. They should have been frightened away. A lesser army would have been. However, it appeared that the descendants of the epic kingdom of Vaidenar retained their ancestors' discipline and militaristic zealousness. They had always held such notions, even at their foundation so long ago in the city then called Su'ur. And so they had continued onward. True, some had fled, but not as many as Taln would have wished. Even after the desertions, even after he himself had killed a good 50 of their number, they had still been strong enough to crush Jasnah's untrained force. He closed his eyes, trying not to think of the rushing waters, the high storm flood crashing through the narrow canyon. He'd killed their scouts. They hadn't known how small and high-walled the fissure would become. They were tired, slow to react. They had marched after him, the entire army, since none were willing to go alone, once he had revealed himself as if by accident, as if caught by their trap. Instead, he had led them to a trap of his own. Men screamed in his memory, screamed as they were pulled beneath the waves, the powerful current smashing them against rocks. Man had always been a limp puppet before the powers of nature, and such was even more true here on Roshar, where the high storms were so stark. 800 men. Dead, as Taln watched, holding to his shard blade with slick hands, the weapon jammed at an angle into the stone wall to give him purchase. He should have died. A regular man probably would have, but he had felt the presence of his brethren pulsing through his blade. He had to find them. The army had left some of its spare mounts at the entrance to the canyon. And the Awakener. Well, Taln had been surprised to find the creature alive, sitting complacently at the bottom of the canyon once the waters receded. But Awakeners rarely acted as expected. Prael and Balayar were far more learned Lonamists than Taln. They might have been able to give an explanation. Taln had never understood awakening very well, even when he did it himself. He opened his eyes with a sigh. He rode at the head of the re-inspired army beside Jasnah and Meridas. With them rode 5 new shard-bearers, men who had received the weapons Taln had gathered from the fallen Vaiden soldiers. He had awarded 3 of the blades to Jasnah's guards, then grudgingly given the last 2 to Meridas's nobleman attendants. The men were the only others in the army who had any real dueling experience. If Meridas had been surprised by Taln's return, he had not revealed it. Already warned by the festivities, Meridas had received Taln like a monarch welcoming a returning hero. To do anything else would have revealed him as petty and jealous. He had accepted Taln's gift of the shard blades as if given to himself, in fact, as if they had been expected. Taln had left that night less certain of his ability to regain control of the army. Regardless of its leader, however, the army marched under Taln's name. They walked behind, proud and reassured that they had made the right decision in joining him. The believers felt vindicated. The disbelievers were more inclined to listen to his warnings. Neither group would ever truly know what he had done for them, never understand what it cost. He should never be forced to kill men. Yet their herald had returned. Their devotion was too close to worship, he knew. He had rebuked the prophet who had claimed to preach in Taln's name, but such a man was more a symptom than a problem. Still, for the moment, Taln did nothing about their devotion. There would be time to teach correct truths once he was certain that mankind was prepared to face the challenge that lay ahead. With 3,000 years of life behind him, it was rare for Talon to feel impatience. Yet he had felt a remarkable amount of anticipation as they rode that day, the army's speed seeming frustratingly lethargic. His brethren waited just a short distance ahead. Once he found them, everything would be all right. They would know what to do. Finally, the army crested a hillside and looked down at the ruins of what had once been Joravan, the holy city. Talon despaired to see what had become of its beauty. Once it had been one of the three most magnificent cities in Roshar, a monument to the Almighty and his worship. Now only rubble remained of its fine metals and polished marble. Instead of alabaster, the city was a dull gray. Its massive streets, once lined with statues, were broken and weathered. Its careful architecture was grown over with moss-like cromstone, the patina gift of 1,000 high storms. An army waited in front of the city. It was easily 3,000 in number, and its men were well equipped. Metal armors shone in the sunlight, and there were even 2 archer-filled towers. "At least we hold the Shardblade edge," Maridos noted, studying the field.
"We needn't go to arms against them,"
Talon said, nodding toward the already constructed parley tent.
"This is not an enemy army, but a force gathered by my brethren."
Maridos rolled his eyes toward one of his attendants, who smiled at the gesture. Yasna held up a hand before any banter could ensue.
"I will speak for us," she said, "and do the negotiations. You two will remain silent, both of you."
Talon frowned, an action mimicked by Maridos.
"A woman cannot—"
Maridos began. Yasna quieted him with a stare. She had given her order, and they were both sworn to obey.
"Kemnar, choose 20 men to join us as an honor guard. Leave the army in Vinda's command. He, with the other 4 shardbearers, are to remain here. In case of a trap, I don't want all of our blades in one place."
She kicked her horse into motion, and they followed, Maridos frowning at the necessity of leaving his 2 attendants behind. As they approached, Talon was able to make out a man waiting beneath the parley canopy. He sat at the table, his posture unconcerned. This was a man who understood that he clearly held the advantage. Lord Aniezer was a gruff-looking man with a wild mane of graying hair. He wore a full beard, also gray, and utilitarian clothing. He looked more like some crazy hermit than he did a military commander, or at least he did until one looked into his eyes. They were solid, the eyes of a man who yielded little and suffered no foolishness. Yasna dismounted. She had composed herself from the previous night's storm-filled oddity and again wore her practiced political face, her hair done up with perfection, her motions graceful and controlled. Talon and Maridos dismounted as well, walking beside her. There was only 1 seat on their side of the table, and Yasna took it without hesitation. Talon entered the shade of the canopy, searching among Lord Aniezer's companions. They were hardened warriors in metal and leather, and not a one was familiar. Talon touched the hilt of his blade, feeling for his brethren. They still waited ahead, in the city.
"Who is the herald?"
Aniezer asked bluntly, and Talon smiled. His brethren had warned of his approach. Yasna didn't betray surprise.
"That is him,"
she said, nodding toward Talon. Aniezer studied Talon for a moment.
"You could have found someone who looked a bit more heroic," he said. "This man is burly, but hardly the pretty face people expect from a herald."
Talon frowned, but Yasna continued without pause.
"He was the best man for the position," she said. "He can make others believe in him."
Aniezer grunted.
"I guess that is what matters."
He eyed Yasna.
"You have the look of a Kolin, raising troops, I assume. But for which army and which king?"
Yasna betrayed none of the confusion Talon felt.
"Does my position matter to you?
It does if you have sided with the loser instead of the victor, Eniezer said with a grunt. So which is it, Jasnah Kulin? Which do you follow, your brother or your uncle?
I no longer support my brother's right to the throne, Jasnah said smoothly. Though she was undoubtedly as lost as Taln, she seemed confident, as if she were the one holding the advantage, and Eniezer the one who needed to bargain. Taln had heard of her political savvy, her uncanny ability to dominate a court, but he had rarely seen it applied. She had always been more open with him, though he suspected that was because she saw nothing to gain from him, rather than because she felt more familiar with him.
I should like to fight at the side of the tyrant Bane, Eniezer noted, rubbing his bearded chin in thought.
It will not be that simple, Jasnah said with a disapproving tone. I have heard of the way you treat the people in this area. You are a despot.
Eniezer shrugged.
The difference between a thug and a king is nothing more than a royal banner glyph. If a man acts in his own name, he is a tyrant. If he acts in the name of the kingdom, he is hailed as monarch. This is a harsh land, Lady Kulin, and it needs a harsh ruler. I have brought peace, if not ease, to their lives.
Jasnah frowned thoughtfully. I would be willing to look past your deficiencies, I suppose.
Eniezer laughed, leaning back in his chair.
By the winds, woman, you have gall. I could destroy your little army right here. Don't think you're the first person to think of using a herald to try gathering troops in Remak. I've destroyed half a ten set such armies in my lifetime, slaughtering the false heralds who ran them. I will suffer no instability here in Remak. Either we make an agreement, or I will destroy you right here.
Then let us deal, Jasnah said, not looking at all intimidated. But let me assure you, Lord Eniezer, if we fail to agree, then I will leave here safely. Do not think that my uncle will not exact retribution upon you simply because you hide here in the wilds.
Eniezer frowned slightly.
You are certain he will win, then? He asked. Your brother has the legitimacy of the crown.
My uncle is a far better warrior, Jasnah said dismissively, and he has the loyalty of the people. But things have changed. Both brother and uncle have another foe to worry about.
Eniezer's frown deepened.
Vaidenar has invaded, Jasnah explained.
Eniezer said. I had wondered why you had come to Remak for mercenaries when Alethkar has always been so proud to fight with only its own men. But weakened by civil war...
So let us dispense with threats, Eniezer, Jasnah said. Will I return to Alethkar with your aid, or will I go alone?
That depends on whether or not you'll pay my price, Eniezer said.
Name it, Jasnah said. But know that I, of course, carry no chips with me. You and I shall make a standard mercenary contract, to be paid after the war is finished or once 1 year passes, whichever comes first.
Ah, but I have little need of more gems, Eniezer said. I only end up giving them back to your country or others buying the supplies I need to stay safe. No, I need something a little bit more permanent than what is offered in standard mercenary contracts.
Jasnah's eyes thinned.
What?
Eniezer leaned forward.
Legitimacy, he said. 900 years ago, your Oathshard king conquered Remak. You destroyed the kingdom's infrastructure and subjugated its people. Then, when Prala threatened your border 2 centuries later, you simply left. Your people claimed Remak, then abandoned its people to despots, squabblings, and raids from the barbarian Kavanars. You destroyed a proud kingdom. Well, I want you to take it back.
He waved to an attendant who pulled out a map and spread it on the table. It was a very detailed representation of Alethkar and Rimac. The aging Eniezer looked over it eagerly, standing and pointing at a line drawn from Alethkar's border to the Holy City and back down to the south.
"You see," he said, "with this perimeter you could easily form a defensible border within Rimac. It would make the Holy City and all of the towns I control part of Alethkar, as well as give your kingdom direct access to the northern mines."
Yasna studied the map. Then, showing the first hint of emotion since the negotiations had begun, she looked up at Eniezer's face. "You really aren't a tyrant."
"Ha!" he said. "Of course I am. But I'm one who is wind's cursed tired of fighting every bandit who tries to steal my place. I'm getting too old to worry about mutiny and rebellion. I'll let Aleth troops into my city. I'll even give up control of the Oathgate, as long as you name me as an independent lord with no tribute."
Yasna looked down at the map, smiling slightly.
"My brother spent 3 years trying to conquer Prala," she said. "I wonder how he would have responded if he had known that Rimac was simply waiting to let us take it."
Eniezer snorted.
"Very well, then," she said, rising. "I see no reason why your price cannot be accommodated. You'll have to get final agreement from my brother first, of course."
"Or your uncle," Eniezer said, "depending on which one still lives. Very well. My men are ready to march. When do we leave?"
Ton stepped forward.
"As soon as you show me to my brethren,"
he said, eliciting a faint frown of displeasure from Yasna. Eniezer looked toward her with a frown.
"Lord Eniezer," Yasna said, "have any other false heralds come to Joravan recently?"
"No," Eniezer said with confusion. "What is this about?"
Tom turned, walking back to his horse.
"I'm riding into the city," he said.
"Follow if you wish, but do not try to stop me."